My mind was full of amazement at the extent of this wonderful world, and the saying of Christ came to me, "In my Father's house are many mansions." The glories of that wondrous spirit land were incomparable. It seemed the best of all possible heavens, with its atmosphere of universal peace, sympathy and happiness. Love hovered over all. How delightful it was to pass abode after abode, watching the spirits enjoy the blessings reaped through victory over the evils and the tribulations of the past. Thrilled and enchanted by a scene of extraordinary tranquility and charm, I could not refrain from speaking to a spirit who was sitting in his garden, resting against a tree entirely surrounded by flowers and luxuriant vegetation of exquisite hue and fragrance. His eyes bespoke an equanimity of mind beyond mortal power to experience or conceive. From his face shone a radiant happiness. As if in reply to my expressions of amazement, he said, "Yes, what an inexpressible joy it is to be permitted to dwell in these glorious realms after so much mortal agony, so many trials, such great tribulations, such piercing sorrows." Another desire came to me, to hear music. I was guided to a high structure of artistic architecture, whose entire top, arranged like a platform, seated a huge orchestra composed of all varieties of instruments, some familiar to me and others strange. Every musician showed himself a master of his art in the frequent concerts given by this as well as by numerous similar organizations. The music began, and immediately I was held entranced by its sweeping majesty, and by its overwhelming emotional appeal. I could not endure it, perhaps because I was still of earth. Completely overcome, I had to be led away. My guide now wished to conduct me to a distant place, where there awaited something of great interest to me. Rising a little from the ground, the body at a vertical angle, we passed swiftly through space, impelled only by the agency of the will. Below us a marvelous panorama unrolled, as we traveled on. The delicately colored spirit houses, with their varied architecture and wonderfully artistic ornamentation, seemed bathed in brilliant light of unearthly splendor. Around them spread gardens with flowers and shrubbery and trees, surpassing in color and design the most perfect creations of human landscape artists. At intervals the great mansions and palaces for large gatherings rose among the trees, impressive in size yet delicate in color and beauty of line. Against the vivid brilliance of flowers and olive green of the level lawns on which multitudes of spirits enfolded in their robes of light and many colors continually moved, these perfect creations rose to mold a harmony of form and color that caught and held the spirit like perfect music. Arriving at a wide flat of open ground, we saw in the distance what appeared to be a great bed of verdant flowers. We descended and approached. On nearing the spot I discovered that what I had mistaken for a bed of flowers was in reality a great throng of women spirits, clad in brightly soft hyphen-colored robes. They were standing before a huge arched structure, apparently awaiting some event. I learned that they were the helpers waiting to be sent on their errands as angels of mercy, both to the earth and to the lower planes. Since I learned that this was but one place among many where the helpers received their directions, I concluded that 24 there must have been myriads of these ministering angels always ready to serve in the hour of need. Deeply interested, I approached to look more clearly at the spirits nearest me. I felt that they were indeed well fitted for the task for which they had volunteered. Their lovely and serene faces were eloquent with warm sympathy. The divine love and kindness that looked from their eyes spoke clearly of the principle that animated all their actions. Words and demeanor told of their impatience to hurry to the work of service that irresistibly called. They made a splendid and delightful picture standing draped to the feet in robes of different colors, wearing a head soft hyphen dress also colored by their auras. This variety of the lighter and brighter color, and the brilliant white light streaming from their faces, together with their exquisite feminine grace, produced an effect of marvelous beauty. A hush now fell on the gathering and every eye turned with expectation toward three figures of authoritative presence, which now appeared. These were male spirits from the higher planes who had come to direct the helpers. They were clad in shining garments and bore themselves with high dignity. They passed below the arch standing in front of the gathering and appeared upon its top, where they issued directions to the helpers, who immediately, singly and in groups, went eagerly on their way. I felt deep gratitude to my guide for the happiness of beholding this scene, which was to me a heaven far more real and comforting than any which I had conceived on earth. My time for leaving the third plane had now come, and I knew that soon I must return to re-inhabit my earthly body. But before that should come to pass, I implored my guide to give me at least a glimpse of the glories of the fourth plane. To my joy, he consented, saying, "You shall see." The fourth plane. As we descended in our approach to the fourth plane, my eyes were almost blinded by the glory of the spectacle. From every direction thronged troops of spirits, apparently converging on a great building of amazing size, beauty and splendor. Each spirit seemed enveloped in a ball of flaming white light, emanating from himself and giving to the brilliant light of this plane an additional splendor and force that to me became almost overpowering in its brilliancy. There the spirits were dressed in aural garments of varying colors which the emanating light did not conceal, the women in robes falling in rich folds, the men in closely soft hyphen-fitting garments. The scene was of marvelous beauty and indescribable brilliance. Almost at once my guide brought me to the lines of the moving procession, and soon, with the rest, I entered the majestic hall toward which the spirits were thronging. It was an enormous auditorium, arranged in a semi-soft hyphen circle about a raised platform. Without apparent ushering, or other show of authority, the great throng found their accustomed places in the most orderly fashion. Seats were assigned to myself and my guide, and while we were waiting expectantly, there was opportunity to study the assemblage. The foremost impression was that already mentioned, of the inexpressible and overpowering brilliance produced by the natural illumination of this plane, the white splendor of the faces, the light about them, and the aura which colored their shining raiment in a multitude of hues. Not less striking was the mental impression produced by their faces, vivid with intelligence and power, and glowing with sympathy, love and understanding. For these spirits had not only 25 triumphed in self-soft hyphen mastery, they had attained wisdom and a knowledge of mysteries of which I could only faintly guess. Conscious of my own unfitness, I felt myself fading into utter insignificance. Conversations and discussions engaged groups of spirits about me, discussions that appeared weighty and of intense interest. I noted here, as elsewhere, in the spirit world, that men were in authority, but this gave them no actual dominion over women, for both take their proper places, and both have their missions. The work of the men is more creative semicolon women conserve and apply. Men are administrators, women inspire to beauty and sweetness, and are angels of mercy, comforters, teachers, and mother spirits. Thus in the spirit world the contrast between masculine and feminine is sharply defined in manner and custom as well as in dress. The modesty and grace of women is set over against the strength and authority of men. A hush now fell on the congregation as five men in garments more shining than any I had yet seen ascended the platform and in turn began to speak. All present listened with rapt attention, hung upon their words and unconsciously pressed closer, eager to know the wonders being unfolded. I could understand nothing, it exceeded my powers, but nonetheless I felt the influence, and struggled to approach the wonderful strangers. My movements in the throng created some confusion, and I was rebuked and eyed with reproving looks, particularly as any spirit that could see and know that I was out of place. One spirit nearest to me exclaimed sternly, "This is the hall of learning and no one is permitted to create any disturbance." However, my guide explained on my behalf, "This spirit has not yet passed over, for special purposes she is permitted here." This seemed to satisfy those about me, and I heard murmurs of understanding. I forced myself to master my excitement and remained quiet until the speakers finished. The great concourse broke up in orderly quiet and my guide and I went on our long journey to the first plane, in accordance with my expressed desire. I saw little else in the fourth plane. But I was informed that life there was similar to life in the third plane, though more developed, more perfect, and more glorious. My visit into the abyss of space, my trips to the various parts of the spirit world, it must be understood, were at different times, for otherwise I should have been too long absent from my body, which would have meant bodily death, and I would have been compelled to remain prematurely in the spirit realms. Thus the last journey I made into the immense spaces of our universe occurred some time subsequent to my return from the fourth plane. This seemed to me by far the longest journey I had made, as the four planes I had visited appeared to be not far distant from our solar system. Accompanied as always by my guide, I passed first through the spaces of our system. As we made our flight towards Venus, I beheld our Earth at such a distance that it appeared like a great big black ball. Saturn we passed so closely that we could perceive the little globes that compose its rings speeding about the larger sphere. Soon a huge black globe passed, or appeared to pass, as if pursuing Saturn. Like a lover following a dancing girl, I exclaimed, lapsing into human levity. My guide did not deign to notice my mild joke. That, he said dryly, is what you call Jupiter. When we passed over Venus, we floated in a horizontal manner with face 26 downward, close to the surface. When partway across it, we came to a complete standstill. Thus I was afforded a splendid opportunity to observe this planet at close range. It appeared to be a dark and dismal world covered with a strange stunted vegetation which showed gloomingly through the clouds of steam that rolled up from the surface of the planet. Myriads of insects flew about in great clouds. What steam! What a mass of insects! Why, nobody could live here, I exclaimed. Other than the insects, I could perceive no evidence of life. I saw no seas nor mountains, there was only barrenness, sterility. The whole scene was overpowering in its awful dreariness and utter desolation. We now left the solar system and penetrated far into the abyss of space, among the countless stars moving with incredible speed and unimaginably multiplied in brilliancy because of our close proximity. The sight challenged imagination. But much as I marveled at this nearer view of these enormous material worlds, I wondered infinitely more at the countless living beings that filled the universe. Spirits of high superiority and authority such as I had never seen even in the fourth plane passed in every direction, singly and in larger or smaller groups. A white light of intense power emanated from each, and enveloped them in a flaming radiance, that varied in intensity in proportion to their spiritual power. All were garbed in glowing white. The combined brilliancy of the light thus produced flooded all space. The great whirling globes were as nothing to this awe-soft-inspiring spectacle. The mere sight of these majestic spirits even from afar was enough to convince the beholder that they were the rulers and controllers of the whole universe, of matter and of spirit. The overpowering dominance of their personalities subdued my spirit so that, staring and stupefied, I trembled and shrank at their presence. Two in particular, a man and a woman spirit, burned with the light of two flaming suns, dimming all others near them with the intense luster of their white radiance. As they swept majestically by me, there flashed across my mind the words, "And there shall be no darkness in them." Dazzled, I cowered, raising my hand to my forehead in an involuntary tribute of humility and awe. It is impossible to say how far I was from them, since space does not limit the astral body. But, near or far, I could clearly distinguish every expression of their countenances. They were dressed in magnificent robes of pure white. The dress of the female spirit was a long flowing robe rippling from her form in loose and graceful lines, as she floated in a perpendicular position, inclined with knees slightly bent. The dress of the male spirit was a close soft-fitting toga that reached to his feet. He moved in a similar posture, but his head was thrown further back. His eyes, following the direction of his outstretched hand, were focused upon some great distant star. As he expounded to his companion some great mysterious truth, he seemed the embodiment of authority and wisdom. but on his features played the soft light of spiritual love which tempered his austerity with its ethereal glow. To me he seemed all soft hyphen powerful, fitted to command instant obedience from any forces, material or spirit. His companion, though possessed of much of his spiritual power and authority, displayed these same qualities, but they were subdued by a feminine grace and loveliness which rendered her face sublime in its serene nobility. They appeared to be gods rather than perfect spirits, yet I was informed that they had once dwelt in human form somewhere. Whether their union began then or later I did not know, but now they were bound for eternity by the ties of spiritual attraction and love. By spiritual development they had risen to the highest power, and, as my guide explained, they were now a part of that supreme power that rules and guides both the material and spirit universe. The host of spirits gazed intently after them with respectful admiration and awe. It was a glorious moment for me when I beheld these marvelous beings, and knew the happiness of their close presence. For a time I stood motionless 27 and gazed after the disappearing glory, which lessened as these two beings passed from sight, till my eyes beheld in the distance only the white light that enfolded them.